and the person Elisha. It's been ages, hasn't it, since we've studied Elisha together. And I've really enjoyed the series so far. It's always good when the minister and the preacher is excited about what they're speaking about. So be encouraged by that. And we're going to read together. My head's everywhere, Jenny. Can you sort that out for me? Can I invite someone to come and read for us this morning? Jeff, why don't you come and read for us?
Two Kings 6:8-23. Now the king of Aram was at war with Israel. After conferring with his officers, he said, "I will set up my camp in such and such a place." The man of God sent word to the king of Israel, "Beware of passing that place, because the Arameans are going down there." So the king of Israel checked on the place indicated by the man of God. Time and again, Elisha warned the king so that he was on his guard in such places. This enraged the king of Aram. He summoned his officers and demanded of them, "Tell me, which of us is on the side of the king of Israel?" "None of us, my lord the king," said one of his officers. "But Elisha the prophet, who is in Israel, tells the king of Israel the very words you speak in your bedroom." "Go, find out where he is," the king ordered, "so I can send men and capture him." The report came back, "He is in Dothan." Then he sent horses and chariots and a strong force there. They went by night and surrounded the city. When the servant of the man of God got up, he went out early the next morning. An army with horses and chariots had surrounded the city. "Oh no, my lord, what shall we do?" the servant asked. "Don't be afraid," the prophet answered. "Those who are with us are more than those who are with them." And Elisha prayed, "Open his eyes, Lord, so that he may see." Then the Lord opened the servant's eyes, and he looked and saw the hills full of horses and chariots of fire all around Elisha. As the enemy came down towards him, Elisha, I need a drink.
It's an emotional verse.
As the enemy came down towards him, Elisha prayed to the Lord, "Strike this army with blindness." So he struck them with blindness, as Elisha had asked. Elisha told them, "This is not the road, and this is not the city. Follow me, and I will lead you to the man you're looking for." And he led them to Samaria. After they entered the city, Elisha said, "Lord, open the eyes of these men so they can see." Then the Lord opened their eyes, and they looked, and there they were, inside Samaria. When the king of Israel saw them, he asked Elisha, "Shall I kill them, my father? Shall I kill them?" "Do not kill them," he answered. "Would you kill those of you who captured with your own sword or bow? Set food and water before them so that they may eat and drink and then go back to their master." So he prepared a great feast for them. And after they had finished eating and drinking, he sent them away and they returned to their master. So the bands from Aram stopped raiding Israel's territory.
Thank you, Jeff.
I don't need this one. Brilliant. Thanks, Jeff. Well, it might be hard to believe, but it was 9 weeks ago that we started this series on Elisha, and we only have 2 weeks of the series left to go. This is the penultimate week before we conclude the series next Sunday. And for those who either have forgotten or not been with us during this series, let me just remind you what we have seen in the example of Elisha so far. We've seen in him a hunger for the Spirit of God, which called, you might remember, for a double portion of the Spirit, the same Spirit that his master Elijah had. And we spoke about that, and we went into that series in some depth, into that topic in some depth, talking about our desire to have the Spirit of God in us. So we got from him this hunger for the Spirit, a belief in the ability of God to do immeasurably more than we can ask or even imagine. And I alluded to this earlier on with the toast-eating challenge. Elisha was presented with some bread in the midst of a severe famine. And Elisha not only showed generosity towards and compassion towards those who had little to eat by sacrificing this bread that was given for just him to eat, but also showed a belief that God can do immeasurably more with a little than we can possibly imagine. And so this small gift of bread that was offered to Elisha was multiplied and given to 100 men who were hungry. And Diane McCauley preached a few weeks ago, and she studied some of the miraculous things that God had done through the ministry and through the person Elisha. He's a man through whom God did many miraculous things. And today's passage, I think, is concerned with eyes. Elisha had eyes to see the plans of King Aram, you might have picked up, warning the king of Israel about these plans, even having not met the king of Aram. He seemed to know or hear through God what this king's plans were and was enabled to prepare, warn the king of Israel. Elisha, secondly, asked the Lord to open the eyes of his servant to see the supernatural protection of God. And we're going to come back to that theme. Thirdly, Elisha then asked the Lord to blind the eyes of his enemies. You know, those who came to capture Elisha. Elisha asked that the Lord would make them blind. And by making them blind, they were led to Samaria. And then the enemy had their eyes opened at the end of our selected passage. They had their eyes opened to what one Bible commentator describes as the futility of opposition to the power of the God of Israel. As their eyes were opened and as they were presented with this banquet, their eyes were opened to the power of God, which was so much greater, so much stronger than the might that they had in their own human strength. But I want to focus particularly this morning on what we read in verse 16. Because here we read about the vulnerability of Elisha. The king of Aram was angry because this man of God, as he's described, Elisha, had scuppered the plans to fight against and contain Israel. There's no explanation as to how Elisha did it, but he heard words spoken by King Aram in his bedroom, we read in verse 12. And he forewarned the king of Israel, and therefore faced horses and chariots and a strong force sent by King Aram to capture this man of God who was in the city of Dothan. Elisha was vulnerable to this mighty force that came after him. And we know about this vulnerability because Elisha's servant, we read in verses 15 and 16, articulated panic, fear at the arrival of these soldiers who were coming after him. But in the midst of this vulnerability, what do we see in the example of Elisha? Well, we see not a sense of being overcome by his vulnerability. Not a sense of being overcome by his humanity, but rather Elisha's trust in the supernatural protection of God. He said to his servant in verse 16, "Don't be afraid. Those who are with us are more than those who are with them." Now, what's Elijah saying here? those who were with him in Dothan were greater in number than those who came against him? I don't think so. Or those who were with him in Dothan were greater in character than those who came against him? Again, no, I don't think this is his point here. Rather, his point was that a servant or a follower of God need not fear what comes against him, whether it be flesh and blood, rulers, authorities, the powers of this dark world, or spiritual forces of evil in the heavenly realms, because the might and the strength of God is on our side. Amen. Thank you for nodding, Dave. In Elisha's case, his faith and trust in God brought not only strength from God himself, but from the unseen reality of God's cabinet, as one Bible commentator puts it. And we read about hills full of horses and chariots of fire all around Elisha. The supernatural presence and protection of God. Now, I don't know about you, but I've felt pretty vulnerable in the past. I have felt the vulnerability of my humanity. I have felt the vulnerability of living in a world where, yes, we are against authorities and regimes, but also live in the truth of a supernatural, a spiritual battle. Forces of good and evil who fight around us. I felt pretty vulnerable in the midst of all of that. And fair enough, no armies with horses and chariots have come after me. But in the vulnerability of my humanity, of my experience in the midst of life, I have needed to know the supernatural protection of God on my side. And some of you will know that in October 2010, I was driving with Jenny on the M2 very early in the morning to visit a church in Leicester. And this was a church that I was visiting potentially to become their minister. And I had this wise idea that I would go, we wouldn't have a hotel, we would just go first thing in the morning and get to Leicester before the service starts. It appeared to be a bad idea. The roads were pretty quiet, all except for the presence of some wild animals. And by wild animals, I'm afraid it was nothing exciting, just rabbits, wild rabbits on the motorway. And whilst driving round a bend at roughly 70 miles an hour, I saw something in the road ahead of me that I couldn't quite make out. And as I got closer and closer, I decided that I would swerve to miss whatever was in the road. It all went pretty well to start with. I was in lane one, and I swerved to my left into the hard shoulder to avoid what was a wild rabbit. And I managed to get into the hard shoulder, but then to rejoin the motorway, I swerved back again, only to lose control of the car, to go across the two lanes, to hit the central reservation, which caused the bonnet to fly up and smash against the windscreen. It felt as though the car was actually taking off, but that's not what happened. We spun round, and the car got stuck in the central reservation, with the windscreen facing the fast lane of the M2. And I remember really vividly the smell, the sound. I remember vividly the sound of Jenny, who was just shouting, "What are you doing? What are you doing?" I can remember that really vividly. And the sound of the airbags going in the car, and I guess a sense of anticipation of what's going to happen next. How hurt are we going to be? And the car stood still, and I turned to Jenny thinking, the damage was really on her side of the car, so I turned to Jenny thinking, what am I going to see here? How much have I caused Jenny to be harmed? And adrenaline was running through me, but the first thought in my mind was, we need to get out of the car. We were stuck in the fast lane, so I was thinking, we've got to get out of the car. And actually, funnily enough, my first thought wasn't a car was going to come into us, but that the car was going to explode. Quite dramatic, too many action films, probably. And so I just said, Jenny, we've got to get out of the car. Are you okay? Are you okay? And she was saying, I've got glass in my shoes. And I remember just feeling a sense of relief. Oh, thank goodness, it's just glass in her shoes. I think we can manage that. And I managed to help Jenny. We opened my door, didn't we, the driver door, and Jenny kind of climbed out over the glass and stuff, and we made our way to the hard shoulder. And what I haven't told you is that Jenny had lost a baby about a year prior to this, and Jenny was pregnant with Hope. And she was in the early stages, I guess 10 weeks or so, of pregnancy with Hope. And I can just remember thinking, oh Lord, not another one. I don't want to lose another one. And there was just this sense that, you know, that was a possibility. But something happened in that moment which I can only describe as being the supernatural presence or protection of God. That in my mind, we should have been at least much more severely injured than we were in that accident. Neither of us had a scratch or a scrape. We did go to A&E to get looked after. And ironically, there were some hand dryers in the hospital that were called Bunny Automatics. God's sense of humour. But I just remember in that moment, looking back, thinking we should have at least been injured. Yeah, fairly seriously injured. And God protected us from injury. But not only that, three people stopped almost instantly to meet our need. The first was a nurse. She wasn't going to work, but she was just a nurse traveling. And she was the first person to stop. And she took care of Jenny and helped her to calm her. And to, I was like, oh yeah, I was going nuts, but she was my concern. And she took care of Jenny. And then there were two others. There was a man with a high-vis jacket. I think he worked for the highway agency. And he stopped and he came over to us and he said, I'm ringing the emergency services. And then there was another man who I never spoke to, who parked his car in the fast lane in front of us and just stood there directing traffic away from us so that we could move away from safety. And to this day, I think, I just wonder, who is that person? Was he somebody who God just sent to take care for us? Did he represent these chariots of fire that we read about in the story concerning Elisha? I can't say yes, definitely, but I can say possibly. Possibly. And I knew something, we knew something of God's supernatural protection that day that exists for those who believe and trust in God. Ironically, this week, a similar situation happened. Thankfully, no damage was done, not even to a car. But I met with Jeff in the week and dropped him off outside his house. Everything seemed quiet in Faversham at the time. And I remember looking over my shoulder to turn from, I was parked in a bus lane, and I remember looking over my shoulder to join, it was the A2, you know, the A2 from Faversham to the roundabout that then takes you to Whitstable or Canterbury. And I remember looking over my shoulder to rejoin the road, and I looked and it was clear, and so I moved over, and then out of nowhere, this car just flew towards me. And all I can remember is seeing it really late, and I just managed to swerve out of the way so that he just missed me, and he swerved slightly to the left, and I saw him kind of bump against the curb as he carried on. And it was one of those moments where you just, life flashes before your eyes. And there was something, I was reflecting on that moment, and there was just something, I believe, something of God's protection over me in that moment. And I'm not going to go into the long-winded story, but you know, all of us face battles in life. And I think we personally feel like we've been through one battle after another recently, and it doesn't feel as though these things are just coincidence, but that something is going on beyond the human realm, and that perhaps we can see. And there was just something in that moment of God taking care where there could have been disaster. And what we learn from this story, what we learn from this example of Elisha, is that with faith in Jesus Christ, we believe in a God who is stronger, mightier than anything else, anyone else, whose might is beyond comparison with anyone or anything else. And those who believe and trust in Jesus not only have their human strength, but they have the strength of God on their side. And Elisha knew something of this strength. Even in the midst of his vulnerability, he knew something of God's strength in him, yes, but also around him, protecting him in the company of God, if you like. And we read these similar things in other parts of Scripture. In 1 John 4, we read, "The one who is in you is greater than the one who is in the world." And I love what we read in Psalm 91. "You who live in the shelter of the Most High, who abide in the shadow of the Almighty, will say to the Lord, 'My refuge and my fortress, my God in whom I trust.' For he will deliver you from the snare of the fowler and from the deadly pestilence. He will cover you with his pinions, and under his wings you will find refuge. His faithfulness is a shield and a buckler. You will not fear the terror of the night, or the arrow that flies by day, or the pestilence that stalks in darkness, or the destruction that wastes at noonday. 1,000 may fall at your side, 10,000 at your right hand, but it will not come near you. You will only look with your eyes and see the punishment of the wicked. Because you have made the Lord your refuge, the Most High your dwelling place, no evil shall befall you. No scourge come near your tent. For he will command his angels concerning you to guard you in all your ways. On their hands they will bear you up, so that you will not dash your foot against a stone. You will tread on the lion and the adder. The young lion and the serpent you will trample underfoot. Those who love me, I will deliver. I will protect those who know my name. When they call to me, I will answer them. I will be with them in trouble. I will rescue them and honor them. With long life, I will satisfy them and show them my salvation." Beautiful words, aren't they? That speak of this God of strength and of might, whose life is everlasting. Whatever comes against us, we will overcome. Now, I'm not saying that we're untouchable. We will get injured and hurt. We will die. But we have everlasting life in this God, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, if we love him and if we live for his glory. And he will protect us. He will deliver us. I find it fascinating that Elisha needs to pray that the servant's eyes need to be opened to this supernatural protection of God. And so this morning, I wonder how many of you need your eyes opened to this truth, that we believe and follow a God who is mighty. He is mighty. He is your strength. He is your shield. He is your stronghold. He is your deliverer. And if you find yourself in the midst of a situation that makes you feel vulnerable, that makes you feel weak, that puts you even in a position of fear, can I invite you to pray that your eyes be opened? Be open to this God who is mighty and strong. Be open, have your eyes be open to the works of God in the midst of this spiritual battle that goes on, that your eyes would be open to the supernatural protection of God that is given to those who follow and believe in Jesus Christ.